Two Americans share the Nobel Prize in Economics.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The final Nobel Prize for the year was just announced this hour, and it is the Money Prize. Reporter Janet Babin joins us live. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Bill.
And the winner is?
Well, the winners are Peter Diamond, Dale Mortensen, and Christopher Passeradees. They won for developing theories that help explain how economic policies can affect unemployment. Their work shows, among other things, why lots of people remain unemployed even when there are plenty of job openings to be had.
Yes, unemployment. I've heard about this topic. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about the winners?
Well, Diamond's an economist at MIT, and President Obama actually nominated him to become a member of the Federal Reserve, but the Senate failed to approve his nomination before lawmakers left to campaign for midterms. Mortensen's at Northwestern University. His research focuses on labor economics, and Passeradees is a professor at the London School of Economics.
And Janet, was this a surprise victory?
Well, Bill, Mortensen had been thought by some to be a front-runner for this prize. Americans tend to do well in the economics department. Since the Economy Prize was first awarded back in 1969, more than 40 Americans have received it.
Well, Americans have not exactly dominated the Nobels overall this year.
No, they haven't. If you're keeping track this Columbus Day, the U.S. has now won three Nobels this year. American Richard Heck, shared the Nobel Prize in Chemistry with Japanese researchers.
That's reporter Janet Babin joining us live. Janet, thank you for that.
You're welcome, Bill.
Microsoft is still the king of the PC, but it is far behind when it comes to smartphones. And today, the company hopes to change that with the release of its Windows 7 operating system for mobile devices. Here with a look at Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
Smartphone sales are growing at a 30% clip, but Microsoft's share of the software that operates phones has fallen by half to just 5%. To try to take back the market from Google's Android and Apple's iPhone, Microsoft today will unveil a group of smartphones that run on Windows Phone 7. Software analyst Rob Enderle says for WP7 to be successful, it'll have to look stunning and work well.
It has to stand out as being something that's different and desirable, and it certainly has to show up on attractive hardware and on carriers that are beyond AT&T.
That won't be the case at first, but analysts expect the software will make downloading and watching videos and movies on phones easier. Still, Microsoft is so far behind the competition that some analysts think it might be better for Microsoft to just buy a more successful phone company, like maybe the one that makes BlackBerry. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Let's call up the numbers. European and Asian stocks are higher today. Investors seem convinced the U.S. Federal Reserve will keep applying the jumper cables to the economy. The flip side of that is the dollar is near a 15-year low against other currencies today, and the price of oil continues to creep upward above $84 a barrel now. On Friday, the Dow Industrials transcended 11,000. They added 58 points, and the close was 11,006.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. By the new Harvard Business Review, the July-August issue is on newsstands now, featuring an in-depth interview with Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. And by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality.
We know the internet has hurt newspapers and the postal service and flea markets, and you would think you could add to that list the phone book. Why do we need this gigantic printed tree killer anymore? Yet the telephone directory hangs on. I'm joined by the author of a new book called The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Ammon Shea, welcome to Marketplace.
Hi, thanks for having me.
If no one reads it, why does the phone book still land with a thud on my driveway?
Well, there are several reasons for that. The first is that everybody likes to say that they don't want the phone book, but when you actually try to take it away from them, there's a good amount of protestation on their parts. Particularly people who are not necessarily conversant with the internet, say people of a certain age, the elderly, they tend to become a little discomfited when you tell them you're going to take their telephone books away.
And what's the next reason the phone book survives?
Well, for Yellow Pages particularly, because they're great business. It's a wonderful profit machine. And in 1996, Congress passed the Telecommunications Bill, which was ostensibly aimed at fostering competition. And there was a little tiny bit of it that said basically anybody that wants to can now print a Yellow Pages. They just need to get the telephone numbers and you can go ahead.
That explains why there are so many more now than when I was a kid.
They've exploded.
It sounds like you love the phone book, Ammon, but it is doomed, right?
Well, one would think it's doomed. However, I think innate human laziness probably has more to do with its survival than anything else. For instance, in Norway, which is considerably more environmentally conscious than we are here, they've had an opt-out policy in place for years, meaning if you don't want a telephone book, just call us and we won't send you one. And approximately 7% of the population takes the time to pick up the phone and say, don't send me a telephone book. Conversely, if you have an opt-in policy saying you only get a telephone book if you ask for one, in the United States, polls have found that approximately 2% of the population will say, yes, I want a telephone book. So until they get around to changing the laws saying you don't need to have a telephone book and decide whether they're going to do an opt-in or an opt-out, I think the book is pretty much going to stick with us.
It's called The Phone Book, the curious history of the book that everyone uses but no one reads. Ammon Shea, thank you.
Well, thanks very much.
And finally, some fans of the rock group Weezer want to pay the band to break up. They don't think Weezer has made any good music since their 1996 album Pinkerton, and they're tired of being disappointed. So these fans are trying to raise $10 million that they can use to bribe Weezer to quit releasing records. And how does Weezer feel about the criticism? Apparently they don't care. The drummer says if they can make it $20 million, we'll do the deluxe breakup. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
New smartphone apps aim to keep people from driving and texting at the same time, and that's great and all, but don't you have to use the phone to turn on the app?
You can activate a feature where every time a text comes in, it will read it to you, and that part works fine. It's answering back that becomes a real problem.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Both hands on the wheel, please. Story is next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.